It's time for the Taking Notes podcast with Julian Robichaud and Bruce Elgort.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 123 of the Taking Notes podcast. My name is Bruce Elgort and I am here with
Julian Bacon Robichaud.
Yeah, Bacon seems to not be the subject of the podcast until you get to the last 2 minutes, right?
Yeah, but you know, it always comes back to bacon in the end, Bruce.
I know, and for those of you who don't know, Julian, what would you say about your, what would you call it with bacon?
I have a kind of an extreme fondness, I think, for bacon. It's not an obsession. It's a great respect, perhaps, for bacon.
Yeah. So maybe one day you can write a book about bacon follow in the footsteps of Marie Scott and Tom Duff, who just published a book on Same Time Aid. It's actually a user's guide for end users, not geeks like you and me, Julian, but this book for people.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, you know, a lot of the questions were around what does it take to write a book? Because I think that's something a lot of people just kind of wonder about. You know, there's a lot of aspiring writers out there, and there's also a lot of people who just tend to read a lot of books or use a lot of books, especially tech books, when you're trying to track down answers for things or learn things. And so, you know, it was really just very interesting listening to them talk about, you know, how they got started on this and how long it took and, you know, how do you work with someone else or how do you work with a publisher? So, you know, a lot of the things were not about, you know, Same Time specifically. This is not some podcast where you learn about Same Time. It's a podcast where you talk about, you know, the book itself and how that all works and what the process is and how you could do it too. Perhaps.
Yeah. In fact, we're starting to see more and more publications, books on things IBM Lotus. So listen to the podcast. Listen to Marie and Tom's experiences developing the Same Time 8 User's Guide. And learn about a possible future book about bacon.
So here we are with... Who are we here with, Bruce? We're here with Tom Duff. Hello, Tom.
You asked me.
Well, that was more of a rhetorical question. I was just trying to include you in the conversation,
oh,
Bruce.
Okay. So who are we here with, Julian?
Well, it's funny you should ask, Bruce, because we are here with Tom Duff.
I'm still here.
Yes. Hello, Tom. Who are you?
Who am I? Good question. Programmer by day and apparently book author by night.
Excellent. And also Marie Scott. Marie, hello.
Hello.
Hello. And who are you?
I'm director of email services at Virginia Commonwealth University by day and apparently author by night and weekends.
By night and weekends. Well, okay. So you guys just you finished the book a few months ago, probably. But the book, it just showed up on Amazon, you know, maybe a couple of days or a week ago. What book is this that we are going to be talking about? Tom, go ahead.
The book is the book that Marie and I wrote together, co-authored. It's the IBM Lotus Same Time 8 Essentials, a User Guide book by Pact Publishing.
Okay, well, and I think I'm going to start with Marie in terms of talking about the book, because Marie, I understand that maybe you were the one who was kind of the initial contact for, hey, let's write this book in the first place?
That's correct. About mid-October last year, one of the acquisition editors from Pact contacted me by email just out of the blue and said, I've read your blog. I like your writing style. Are you interested in writing a book about Same Time? Which just kind of just floored me because it wasn't anything that I'd ever thought about doing or even realized that, you know, anyone was reading my blog, you know, in terms of, oh, well, let's look at someone's blog because they might be a potential author. So I kind of got over my initial shock and
she freaked out.
Yeah, I did. And started thinking about what would really be involved in writing a book about same time. And they had an idea in mind that they wanted a user's guide. They were looking at a specific market. So they had already done some research as to, you know, what their target audience, who their target audience would be. So, you know, I kind of looked around to see what was available on Amazon and started kind of doodling in terms of, okay, how many pages would this be? You know, what would be involved? And I thought there's absolutely no way I could do this by myself without just going completely nuts. I manage a very large email system at the university, and without possibly killing a few users or my boss and during the course of trying to write the book by myself, I decided that perhaps I should probably get some help. So I contacted Tom, whose first response was, "Well, I've never thought about writing a book before. I can't write a book." And he got over his shock. And Tom, what did you say?
You know, at first, my first inclination was I'd be more than happy to help Marie in terms of, you know, reading over material or giving hints or, you know, things like that, but not anything highly formal. And after a short period of conversation, it pretty much turned into a, why don't we co-author this? And I always swore I would never write a tech book because of the amount of work that you end up spending versus how much you actually see in return, you know, money-wise, obviously. There's a lot of time and effort involved, and I just swore I'd never do it. But I got to the point where, at this point, I just figured that it was something that I really needed to focus on at this point, and taking the opportunity to write with Marie would be a really good way to get into this without trying to do it myself.
Wow, so they discovered Marie, and Marie discovered you. Kind of.
Well, you know, to be fair, we were already working on at the Lotusphere session for TDI, which, you know, TDI, free, going on. So,
and I didn't even get to say that.
I know you didn't, but, you know, the pool was, were we going to get that in there sometime during the podcast? So
okay.
I just went ahead and settled the pool real quickly.
All right.
So we were already working together on the Lotusphere presentation. So it wasn't like we had never talked or we didn't have some level of, gee, can we work together on a project? So we just kind of expanded it by a magnitude at that point with the book.
I'm sorry.
So the next step was to come up with an outline. You know, they had their concept and they said, okay, put together an outline for how the book should be laid out, which was just something that Tom and I were just completely like, oh, well, what does that mean? And how do we put that together? And we tossed around some ideas and I spent one weekend holed up in the local public library and managed to come up with this document that also included page counts for each chapter. And submitted it to the publisher, and it was basically the document that ended up being the final outline for the book, almost verbatim. I think we had, what, Tom, two chapters that we just kind of reversed the page counts.
Right. You know, we pretty much said it was going to be a 300-page book, and when we were writing, they want you to come very close to hitting those page numbers because they have to actually plan their print runs to say, if this is going to be a 300-page book, they don't want it to be 150 pages or 600 pages because it messes them up. So when we were writing, we were trying very hard to hit page counts. We hit every page count on the button. I mean, if we said it was going to be 25 pages, it was 25 pages. And the only one we had to adjust were the last two chapters because we realized we needed about 5 more pages on Chapter 11, and we figured we could steal 5 pages from Chapter 12. But other than that, what Marie put together was remarkably exact and dead on for what we ended up writing to and the subject matter that we covered. And it was an incredible feat that she pulled off to put all that together at the beginning, having never done this before. Mm-hmm. And then being that, you know, that ended up being the final book setup that we ended up doing.
Marie, are you a same-time administrator at the university?
Yes.
Okay, but Tom, you're not a same-time guru, right? I mean, you weren't a same-time guru.
Yeah, one thing that made this very doable is the fact that we were focusing on same-time from the user's perspective. So this book doesn't have any development in it. It doesn't have any administration in it. This is the book that you would give to Joe User, who's looking at this going, okay, I know how to start an instant message chat, but I'm guessing that same time is a whole lot more than that. What can I do with same time? This is the book that they would use to find out exactly what it is that same time can do for them, how to use it, what all the different features are, how to activate those features, things like that. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, actually, I was, you know, quite proficient at writing it because I was the same time user at work too. So that was kind of the experience base that we were playing.
The question that I have is, how did you actually get started writing? I mean, you have the outline, you know what chapters you have to write, but neither of you have written a book before.
Very true.
So who did chapter one?
Go ahead, Marie.
We both did. During the course of the book, you may have seen some of our tweets. I mean, we used Dropbox to set up a kind of a folder filing scheme that we use to keep different versions straight. The publisher has a Word template and guidelines for how you put together drafts and what your images should, what format they should be in, and how you include an image in your document, and if you're including screen text, what format it should be in. And so you have some guidelines in terms of how the format should be, so you're not just putting all this together yourself. So we had the outline. We knew what we had to cover in the first chapter. And we kind of sat down and just said, okay, here's what we said we were going to cover in the outline. Tom, why don't you make the first pass at it? Because Tom can write very quickly because he's used to doing that because of his book reviews. So he, in the case of the first chapter, he laid something down so we could just kind of take a look at it to see where it was going to go. And then I looked at it and said, well, that's really not where I think we need to kind of go in this direction. And then I would go through it and kind of switch things around and add more text or take stuff out. And then we just kind of came up with this concept that we would include real life scenarios in each of the chapters. So we just kind of came up with these, like I said, little scenarios. So-and-so is a same-time user and they want to use, they have colleagues that are in different buildings and they're unable to come together for a meeting. And but they can use same-time meeting center to, you know, save money and travel time.
Or Narish, you know, wants to check in with his colleagues. He's on the plane, but he doesn't want to get his laptop out of the luggage rack overhead. He wants to be able to use his same-time mobile client to contact his colleagues and get a message to him before he takes off. So everything was brought back down to a very practical level of, okay, you've told me that I can do this. Why would I want to? We tried to establish the why up front, and then told you what it was you would be doing to get to that outcome throughout the rest of the chapter.
So it still kind of ended up being a user guide, but more of a user guide in terms of how you use the product in different situations, perhaps?
It's definitely a user guide to say, okay, you know, this is how you can do attachments. This is how you can send files. This is how you can do graphics. This is how you would work with same time advanced meeting centers, things like that. But once again, rather than just throwing out a lot of esoteric knowledge to where nobody really could figure out, well, okay, you told me how to do this, but I still don't know why to do it. In the beginning, you know, section before you got into the details, probably within, say, the first page, we would try to put three or four bullet points of, you know, a real person trying to do a real task using same time. And that all kind of revolved around what that particular chapter was. So for same time mobile, we were coming up with scenarios that were mobile related. For same time advanced or same time using the meeting center, we were trying to come up with situations where, you know, maybe Teresa is doing training for 6 offices in 4 countries, and she really doesn't have the time nor budget to be able to go out and visit all these different offices in all these different countries. Using meeting center, she could actually do the training, record the training, and then once it's recorded out there on same time, people can come in and actually view that training. So she gives it once and then uses that to leverage her time and save, obviously, tons of money, not having to give this over and over and over again. So things like that.
Well, you know, speaking of time, one of my questions was, since I've never written a book before, how long does this whole process take? I mean, Marie, from the time that you first got contacted by the publisher to like a week ago when this book ended up on Amazon, how long did all of that take?
Well, again, I was contacted in the middle of October last year, and the book was published online on the PACT site on September 23rd. So almost a year. We finished the first draft at the end of June. So what happens is once you've got your outline, you come up with a schedule of work, you know, and of course you also go through a contract process. You know, most publishers,
if we don't do it,
yeah, publishers have a standard contract, and we went through that and got it signed. And then after the contract was signed, they, of course, want to know when you're going to start work and how quickly can you turn it around. And so we came up with dates, and we had a gap as well in terms of Lotusphere, because Tom was presenting, I was presenting, so we kind of allowed some time in there for that. And then right after Lotusphere, we picked up, and it was really a chapter almost every 2 weeks. And so we finished at the end of June, and then there was kind of a pause, and then we almost immediately, probably 3 weeks later, started getting the first rewrites back. And rewrites involve anything that the tech reviewers or the editors recommend in terms of changes. So you start working on those, and they go back. And then there's generally either a third or a final rewrite. And we were doing the finals, as late as when, Tom? Second week in September?
Yeah, I mean, we did our final upload. We did our final upload while I was in Disney World on vacation. And that was probably September, 13th, 14th, somewhere around there. So we had done like 3 or 4 chapters, and you get to that final point and they're saying, okay, here's our final PDF version. You can review it if you want, but this is what's going to be uploaded. Well, we started looking at it, and it's okay, you didn't include the last set of changes that we made. So you'd have to go through and say, no, this isn't correct. You need to make these changes, or I see where there's a typo or stuff like that. So we were turning around 3 and 4 chapters a day in that last day before we did the final upload, because they do most of their work in India. We would get up in the morning and find that we had files waiting for us. And so we'd get this message of, okay, we uploaded the stuff. And as we got close to the end, it was, you know, when can you get this back to us? You know, and 2 minutes later, it's like, do you have it yet? Chill out. We just woke up. And so, you know, there's this balancing act of course, the publisher wants it immediately. And if you didn't have day jobs, yeah, you could sit there and probably crank out, you know, 1 or 2 chapters every week and have this thing done in, say, 2 months. But if you're like Marie, myself, and, you know, most of the other people who are probably going to be listening to this podcast, you do have day jobs and you probably have some semblance of a life, such as it is, once you get off your day job. And so you've got to balance that all together. And that's why we ended up going with the chapter every 2 weeks, which was doable for us. It was still a bit of a push at times, depending on how big the chapter was and how in-depth it was. But, you know, it was something we were able to survive instead of trying to kill ourselves in 2 months to get it all out.
Well, any big surprises while you were doing the book? Like anything that took like a lot longer than you thought it would, or something that just, I don't know, just shocked you from the writing process?
The first chapter really was the hardest. I mean, we had heard that from other people and other authors, and it truly was the most difficult. It wasn't the most complex in terms of technical content. It didn't have any images. It wasn't very long, but it was, I guess it was just as much a mental hurdle as anything else. We agonized over that probably more than any other chapter.
It's hard because you're trying to set your tone and your voice for the rest of the book.
Exactly.
unless you're a team that's worked together and you can just drop into the routine real quickly. Marie and I had not written stuff like this together. We had done some blog entries, but it wasn't as if we were really highly comfortable with what each other was doing. So it's like, okay, this is how I would normally write it. I tend to be very conversational. You know, so Marie had to look at that and say, okay, when are you being too conversational? And so we had to mesh to where the styles worked well together. And, you know, in my opinion, I thought we had a very good style, that we weren't on opposite ends where she was very academic and I was very conversational, or vice versa. We just had styles that were relatively close to begin with. And so when I was able to give her a first draft of a chapter, say it was a 30-page chapter, and I'd say, okay, here's the first 20 pages, you know, do what you want with it and start filling in some of the other information, it wasn't like you had two completely different styles and voices that you were trying to mesh into something that was close. The feedback we were getting from the author, from the editors at PACT, in fact, what was it, Maria? I think it was on the third chapter. We'd gotten the first chapter back and they said, okay, this is, you know, great first chapter. This is the hardest, you know, we have very little feedback. This is wonderful. Like, okay, fine, blah, blah, blah. And we did the second one. We did the third one and we weren't getting anything back from the editor. And by then we had pretty much established our style. So I emailed him and said, okay, we're not hearing anything back from you. Is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? I don't want to get any further into this and have you say, you know, this really isn't quite the way that we were envisioning this book to be.
We were kind of panicked because we really hadn't heard anything.
Yeah. And so they answered us like in a day and said, the reason you're not getting any feedback is because your writing is really clean and we don't have any feedback. This looks really good for a first draft pass, because Marie and I were both editing each other's work. Mm. And at that point, I think we really relaxed and started to go with the flow, knowing that our style was okay. And that then we could concentrate a little bit more on content and how we wanted to put the material together, rather than saying, well, are they going to reject the whole thing because they just don't like the style of the book? Mm. I think that was probably one of the one of the biggest things for me, surprise-wise, is, wow, you know, we actually were able to put something together that didn't have to be completely rewritten with every chapter that we gave them. You know, we felt like we were giving them really clean material to start with.
Tom, you said the word surprise, and we're talking about same time here, so I'm going to ask you and then ask Marie. You're both same time users. What were things you learned about same time that are in the book that you didn't know before, Tom?
I think for me, a lot of it was because we don't use same time advanced at work. Some of the things that same time advanced gave you the capabilities of, such as the persistent chats, some of the instant polling features. When I got into that part of the writing and got, you know, it's like chapter 9, chapter 10, somewhere around there, I'm thinking, oh, this is kind of cool, which I had really never had a chance to play with that. So that was new stuff for me.
Sorry, what else, Tom?
No, that was probably the biggest surprise for me. A lot of it was just little details along the way when Marie would say, well, you know, you didn't catch this little piece. I was like, well, I didn't catch it because I didn't know same time did that. So you kind of learn as you go on some of these things.
All right. How about yourself, Marie?
Some of the features with contacts and preferences that are available either in the Connect client or the Embedded client, there's so much there that if you don't actually get into the preferences to see what you can actually tweak, like with, for example, for alarms, what you can set in terms of if you want, if a contact goes online or actually goes into do not disturb mode, you can actually be notified. I mean, there were lots of little things in there that once you start digging and actually have to write about it, it's like, wow, there's just tons and tons of stuff that is available if you want to learn about it. And we reached a point where we kind of wanted to find out whether or not we were on the mark technically. You know, we've talked about writing and things like that. So we said, okay, well, do we want to see what some of the technical folks think about it? So we sent chapter 4, which is all about contacts, out to, we sent it out to Susan Bullock and we sent it out to Paul Mooney and said, can you take a look at this? This is an early draft, but, you know, let us know what you think. Is it, are we way on off mark? Is it, you know, do you think your users would learn anything from it? And both of them came back with a really remarkable statement. They both learned something from it, which just kind of blew us away. Because here's two people that we kind of considered as experts, and they learned something.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is so cool. I know I've read some of the PACT books before, and I've, you know, uncovered things that I just didn't know. In fact, I do refer to some of them on my bookshelf here all the time. And PACT has actually filled a void, right, in the world of, you know, it's Domino, same time, X pages, quicker, I believe, right? They have several books available and are in the process of developing several more for people in our community, well, in our profession, right?
That's correct.
And I think one of the things that they have going for them that makes them a little different from, say, the O'Reilly's or the IBM Presses, you know, part of Pearson Publishing, is that, you know, they are an offshore model. Their main offices are in England. And the vast majority of the people that we interact with are in India. So, you know, extrapolating out from what we know on technical offshoring, you've got to think that their costs are probably less, both just labor-wise and, you know, some of the actual physical printing and stuff, I would assume, would also be less. So it seems like they go for a lot higher volume in the number of books that they turn out, rather than saying, okay, we're only going to publish, say, 50 books this year, but we're going to have to make sure that each book sells, you know, 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 copies. It seems like their cost structure is such that they can probably get a profitable figure at a much lower number. And then for us as writers, Pact has one of the highest royalty rates. And so where normally you'd think, okay, you've got this advance and, oh, I'm going to make all this money. You're not going to make a lot of money from tech books, you know, unless you hit it big with like a For Dummies title that everybody wants to buy or something, or you hit a head first concept that gets spun out as a series. But what you find with their royalty rates for Pact is that the number of books that need to be sold before you get your advance paid out and you get all that, you know, put against the royalties, now you start getting royalty checks, it's a lot lower than what I would normally expect. So while I'm not expecting to retire on this by any stretch of the imagination, I do expect that at some point, you know, maybe a check will come in the mail one quarter and I'll go, oh, gee, I can go to McDonald's and, you know, have a really nice Happy Meal or something.
Mm-hmm. So, Marie, would you write another book?
Sure.
Okay, Tom?
Yeah, actually, it was funny because once we finished it, my wife was like, oh, good, you're done. And I'm thinking, oh, well, you know, thinking of maybe another book. And she's like, you said you were not going to get involved in anything big. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, it's kind of addicting.
Right. Tom, so that's kind of a solid maybe.
Yeah, that's what
it's it's a very solid maybe. And for her, it's like, oh, my gosh, he's going to disappear for another year in the basement.
So just a couple things to wind the show down here, right? Number one is that there's a free chapter of the book available somewhere, right? Where is that?
It's out on a site called Scribd, which is S-C-R-I-B-D. I believe you'll probably have it in your show notes for the URL, but it's what chapter is it, Marie? I'm blanking.
Seven.
Chapter 7 is out there online. It's the way that Pact put it together for the online site is you've got the cover, you've got the table of contents, you've got the chapter out there, and it gives you a really good feel for the kind of content that they've got in the book, what we did with it, and you can look at that and then rent out and buy a full copy.
Okay. So you can buy it from Pact on the Pact site. You could buy it from Amazon and other book retailers, right? I mean, it's going to be available, say, Barnes & Noble?
I'm certainly hoping one day I'll walk into a bookstore and go, hey, everybody, this is me.
Okay. You guys have a blog, too, right, that supports the book?
That's correct. It's sametimeusersguide.com.
And what's going to be on that site, Marie?
We're going to include information about book events. Like, we just posted the Tri-State Lug giveaway that we're doing. We'll post information about the same time as we find out about it. If there's any updates about the book, we'll post them out there as well.
Let's see. And I did have one other question, Julian, and I think Julian passed it on to me, and that was, will the book be available in any digital formats?
It is available ebook format from the Pact site. In fact, I think that if you go out and buy it from the Pact site, you can buy it both hard copy or ebook. But if you buy both of them together, I think almost, you know, cost wise, it's almost like the ebook is a freebie. So if you want to get an ebook version of it, go to the Pact site. I don't see that they're doing it yet on the Amazon site. I don't know what the plans are for it yet. You know, we're still a bit of a newbie in this whole thing, too. So.
All right. Well, we will have links to the Pact site and to the blog of your book and to both of your sites and maybe something else. Who knows what other links we might put on the show notes page. So anyone listening to this can just go to the Taking Notes Podcast website and you will be able to go from there and just click right through to find the sample chapter and how to buy the book and all sorts of other useful information. Mm-hmm. All right, do we miss anything? Anything else you need to tell the listening audience before we leave, Tom?
I would just like to leave the audience with, kind of a statement that, you know, I know a lot of people talk about the fact that, you know, oh, it'd be great if we had, you know, so many more books for notes out there. And, you know, we can't have, you know, can't go into a bookstore and find, you know, books on notes anywhere. It's not a matter of, oh, gee, I'll just sit down and write a book in 2 weeks and poof, it appears on the bookshelf. It is a lot of hard work. In terms of the monetary money, you know, monetary reward that you get off it, no, it's really not there. But it is a very professionally satisfying thing to put all together or put all your information together in a book, you know, get it bound, have it edited, and have this as really a professional calling card for you. You know, if that's something that you really want to do or something that you think you've got a subject matter that you'd like to cover, you know, feel free to contact Marie and I. We've got a little bit of experience now, and we'd be happy to put you in touch with the people that we know at PACT and kind of give you an idea of what kind of process you go through in trying to make a pitch for a new book, what kind of things they're looking for. And, you know, who knows, 6 months down the road, you can be the next author of a book in the notes community and see where you go from there.
All right. Well, I'd like to
We have to ask Marie. She has to have some closing words, too.
I was going there, man. I was going there.
Well, I would reiterate what Tom said. And actually, I've just recently done that with a colleague, one of the nerd girls. I had that conversation today. So maybe something will go her way. You know, we'd be happy to talk to anyone who's interested, and it doesn't have to even be anything related to Domino, but if there's something, you know, anything that we do in our field, like some of the JavaScript or JSON or any of the bits and pieces that we work with, I mean, there's PACT, it does a lot of open source materials, and we could certainly, you know, get you in the direction that you need to go and tell you, you know, how involved it's going to be. And yes, you will get to see your families, and you know, it that it is a very satisfying process and project, and I'd encourage anybody to do it.
Yeah. Julian, when are you going to write a book about bacon?
Bacon.
About bacon. You know, I don't know. That market might be saturated.
I don't know, but do they have, I mean, they when they put together a book, they do a market survey. So what you'd have to do is, are there training sessions about bacon?
Sure. Yeah, there's like little weekend getaways you can do. There's
Bacon University.
How expensive are they? Yeah, would the book be, would the book
really
be cheaper?
Well, I don't want to give away all my secrets.
Okay, there you go.
You can get your bacon book and just, you know, stand in the back of the room and say, you know, here's our bacon seminar. And in the back, you can buy my bacon book. And pretty soon, you know, you're just becoming the bacon guru of the U.S.
Yeah. Ah.
Well, his could be the scratch and sniff bacon book.
There you go. I like
it. All right. Right. There's definitely a market for a scratch and sniff bacon book.
All right, I'm wrapping. That's it. I'm not wrapping it in bacon. So, Marie, thank you again. Tom, thank you. Go ahead, Marie. You can say you're welcome because we have a little delay today.
You're most welcome. I've enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
Again, congratulations on the Same Time 8 User's Guide. And everyone, go buy 10 copies now. And if you see Marie and Tom at Lotusphere, make sure you bring your book so they can autograph it. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to episode 123 of the Taking Bacon podcast. Sorry. So, all right. Take care.